The End of Our Exploring. A Hands of the Emperor story, written by Yunitsa and read by Calicuria. This story has been rated for audiences teen and up, contains the pairing Artoran Damara, Cleofer Kip Madang, and has been tagged No Archive Warnings Apply. Additional tags for POV First Person Besotted, Post Return of Fitzroy Angersaw, written before the release of At the Feet of the Sun. Summary, in which I finally make my way home. To say that I fell in love instantly, whatever ring of poetry it might have, would surely make an inaccurate description for what were, by some counts, over 900 years of slow-growing friendship. It was true that meeting Cleofer, that glorious, terrifying shock of encounter as his eyes and his mind first caught mine, had filled me with an effervescent inward giddiness that I measured my days, and, therefore, I began to suspect, the very flow of time in Solara, by the hours when I would see him, that in sidelong glances I observed every detail of his posture and his voice and his hands at work, that I wished to know everything about him and did not dare to intrude upon him by asking. Yet one must take the context into account. Cleofer had been the first person to meet my gaze, to see me, in 17, or 117, years. He had let the first chink of light into my prison, where I had been in the dark for half my life. I had been much too dazzled to pay any heed to the intensity or the color. And then, just as I had become resigned to ending my days in a round of ritual and duty, with only that small, high window lighting my solitude, he had done it again. He had flung open the door and welcomed me through it. By that time, of course, I had come to know him better, to see not only his brilliance and efficiency and humor, but some hint of the life and the suffering that had made him, and to care for him very deeply. I heaped praise and honors and clothes upon him. I called him my dear Kip, because it so scandalized him and everyone else in the vicinity, and because he was. The distance between us had narrowed from 7 ells to that one careful foot, sitting side by side on the sandbank in the Vangavayavan sun, but no further. As my subject and my subordinate, of course, he was both literally and morally untouchable. I would never forget the sight of that woman burning alive from a mere accidental brush against my arm. And as for the idea of asking my fiercely proud, permanently overworked secretary to undergo 4 months of complex and painful purification rituals, also that he could serve as some sort of imperial concubine, it was unthinkable. And so it simply never occurred to me to think it. I was, besides, quite alienated from my body and its sensations for all that time. It was a sacred object. It had formerly glowed, and was still tended to all my waking hours by careful attendants with silk gloves and golden rods. Food, swimming, and lengths of silk cloth were the closest things I had to physical pleasures. The moon, confusing as that had been, the closest thing I'd had to a lover. I touched even myself as little as possible, in casual ways, and certainly not in more deliberate ones. To do so in the paltry privacy of my study or behind the curtains of my bed, a pair of guards just beyond, listening to any sounds I made with impassive faces, seemed to me as tawdry and pointless as my uncle's pornography, and I had so very little self to please. Only the man I could sometimes see reflected in glimpses of Kip's warm eyes, a man he could be fond of, in all the allowable ways there were between us. Even when those limits increased at last, with his assumption of the viceroyship, when I could hold his hands, when I asked him, how Julinar would laugh if she knew, to help me practice the gestures of greeting, I did not truly know what I was doing. If my heart raced and I trembled at his grip on my shoulders, at the dry brush of his lips against my cheek, well, it was only that it had been so long I still feared hurting him. I feared very much being someone who could be touched. Though I realized this only later. There's something to be said for talking about my feelings. I had had to relearn affection and closeness slowly, while on my quest with my old companions. And meanwhile, I thought of Kip every day, prompted by things small and large. I talked of him, and thought that my friends exchanged amused glances because of my remaining awkwardness in conversation. All this by way of explaining why I was perhaps the second most surprised man in the room when, upon returning to the Palace of Stars at last, my first act was to take my viceroy's face in my hands and kiss him. I had not, I should say, entered the palace by any conventional or gate-based means. It seemed a waste of what would be, for some time yet, my last night of freedom. Instead, I'd climbed in through one of the most well-defended windows in the former empire and nearly got run through by my own commander of the guard, before Ludwig recognized me and was persuaded to accept my whispered assurances that all was well, and to let me into the Lord of Zunid's private study, where Cleofer sat in one of his beaten-down armchairs with a cold cup of coffee and a stack of reports by his elbow. He had dozed off. He trusted Amo and his men, and he never would gain a sense of his own importance. I was able to approach very close before I woke him. For a long time I stood there, gazing down at his dear, familiar face. The straight, determined brows, the flare of his nose, the powerful shoulders that had been evident even under the poorly fitting robes he used to wear. He'd had to carry the world upon them, and bore it willingly. His neat, close-cropped hair had gone wholly gray. There were new lines on his face, joining the well-known marks of strain and laughter. A deep crease in the middle of his forehead, looking nearly painful, another by the side of his mouth, where it was folded down thoughtfully even in sleep. I wanted, in a rush of overwhelming affection, to smooth it out for him. So, I had gone out in search of my heart, and here, in the time-honored fashion of quests, I had found it, waiting just where I had left it, but able to recognize it as such for the first time. I loved him, long and hopelessly as a poet, and in every way conceivable. Kip came awake with a stir, followed by a guilty start as he realized he'd fallen asleep. And then his brown eyes focused, and a smile of sheer, open joy rose into them like the sunrise. Not of relief, at seeing the man on whom his duties depended, of joy, at seeing me. And so I kissed him. It seemed, in the moment, the only sensible thing I could do. His lips were soft and slack beneath mine. I was so long out of practice that I nearly drew back at once, terrified I had made a dreadful mistake. But then his neck tilted and he was kissing me back, as carefully and thoroughly as he did everything, sending a flood of bright feeling through me. When it finished at last, I was breathing hard, my whole body curved into a yearning arc. "My lord," he said, and I could hear it now for the endearment it was. "That is not how you greet someone." "Oh, Kip," I laughed, a trifle hysterically, and buried my face in his shoulder. I did not have a complexion for blushing. My skin felt bathed with heat all the same. I was sitting more or less in his lap. I'm sorry to say it was not a dignified position. Two middle-aged men in a chair not made for it, one of them with a build tending toward the angular and a lingering instinctive terror of physical contact. Kip put his hand to the small of my back to steady me, warm as a wax seal. "I'm sorry I left for so long," I said, into the fabric of his collar. He shook his head. I could feel it. The letters were entertaining. The last one was 4 months back, though. "Did you find what you were looking for?" "Yes," I said at once, raising my hat. He really had the most wonderful eyes. I could not go longer without seeing them. "Oh, yes. I have also found the new Lady of Zunid. She's waiting at a hotel down in the city, until we can arrive properly. I think you'll like her." "Properly?" I always enjoyed watching him think. But how did you... Did you climb the wall? He did not say my lord that time. He was not speaking to a lord. I said, incandescently happy, I recently gained the ability to transform into a crow. I could see Kip assessing if I was drunk, or if he was having a particularly vivid dream. That was a common reaction whenever I told someone the exact truth. I wanted to see you, I went on, before all of it, while I was still me. Kip, you always know everything. Did you know? I made a not particularly clear gesture between us. No, he said slowly. He was still looking slightly stupefied. But you do. My... Tor, he said, with a little stumble that always made my heart catch. A blush did show up on his skin. It was charming. I've always been yours. I told you I loved you years ago. Like a brother or a cousin. Not that I had much room for comparison. The first time I had met my own sister, I had had to allow her to refuse bearing my children. But he surely did. Yes, well, perhaps some things weren't yet clear to me. I shall look forward to elucidating them, I said, with just a hint of promise that made his eyes go wide and dark. And, oh, I thought with sudden rapture certainty, it would be good with him. Whatever, whenever we did. Even reviewing taxation policy had been good with him. The thing is, I added, shifting in his lap, I'm not really in the palace until tomorrow. I can have them make up a guest room. I'd rather go to bed with you. But that was too much, for us both. I knew it as soon as the words left my mouth. To sleep! I don't tend to sleep well alone. Unless you mind. I worried suddenly that I was bullying him. I'd almost forgotten how powerful I was. But Kip was impossible to bully. He grumbled. I thought I detected the words, turn into a crow, and helped me up, not remarking on the alarming sound from my knee, and led me into his bedroom, where he got ready for bed matter-of-factly behind the screen. I took off my outer robe and climbed under the blankets and tunic and trousers, curling onto my side and listening to the murmur of his movements. The bed was more than wide enough, and the sheets had been warmed. Yet as soon as he joined me, I shuffled towards him, inexorably drawn near. Perhaps it was a blessing, after all, that I had not spent all those years mired in helpless desire for him, tormented by impossible thoughts about the strength of his hands and the stubborn set of his mouth. Although, he was a master of solutions and loopholes, my Cleofer. He had once embraced me through a blanket. Surely he would have thought of something, had we known. I pressed a trifle closer, sliding my hand into the open neck of his sleep shirt, glad not to be touching him through a blanket now. As I had suspected, his skin was as soft as velvet, stretched over a sleek layer of fat and then that glorious muscle. Had I been less preoccupied, I could have named the exact type of velvet. Something from Vunra. Kip's arm came around my waist cautiously, until we were holding each other like two figures on a monument. I angled my nose into his neck, liking the warm, human smell of him overlaying the woody scent from his clothes, and sighed, contented as a cat. "Who are you?" Kip said, a smile of bemusement warred in his voice. I felt suddenly very tired. His flight usually left me, and the night was already perfect. Yet I was never one to leave well enough alone. And so, since I had promised, since I wished him to know, since it was as yet too soon to speak of a house in Gorgo City and what I knew of Angavayevan marriage customs, I told him. And once he had finally stopped laughing, he seized me in a hug that held as much punishment as tenderness, and thumped me on the arm as though he had been doing it all his life. And then he kissed me, as though he had been doing that all his life, too. The thought occurred to me, giddy and foolish, that perhaps he had. I pronounced something of the sort, rather muffled. "Oh, no," said Kip, when I had repeated it. He spoke with utter secretarial certainty, although his voice was still suffused with laughter and passion. "I definitely remember that." The end. Thanks for listening.